everyone. Welcome to episode 20 of the Planning Period Podcast, your Ed Break Room. I'm your host, Brad Scheffler. Wow, episode 20. Feels like a big deal to me. And I have a really special announcement to celebrate it, but I'm going to save that for the end of the episode. Look at that, 20 episodes in and learned how to tease. This week on the podcast, I talk with Chuck Poole. Chuck is a podcaster, blogger, teacher, coach, and physical embodiment of positive energy. I first connected with Chuck through his podcast, Teachonomy Talks, which is an extension of his website, teachonomy.com. And it's a great, quick, weekly podcast to really just boost your spirits. Chuck and I talk about his unique classroom outlook, how we need to stay out of the negativity vortex, finding your community and helping others find theirs, and many of the lessons he got from being coached and learned from coaching. And don't forget to stay tuned to the end of the episode where I have a pretty special announcement I don't think you're going to miss. But for now, sit back and enjoy episode 20 of the Planning Period Podcast, my interview with Chuck Poole. All right, hi everybody, and welcome to the Planning Period Podcast. This week, I am joined by Mr. Chuck Poole, a podcaster and blogger and all-around badass. And so, if you could, Chuck, maybe just give a little introduction to yourself. Tell my audience who you are.
Yeah, sure. Like you said, my name's Chuck Poole. I'm actually a podcaster, a blogger, a teacher. I'm the founder of teachonomy.com. And I basically started that platform or that site to encourage and inspire teachers as much as possible. That's the ultimate goal and the reason why I decided to start it. I've been teaching for quite a while and coaching for actually even longer. So, I was involved with coaching sports really since my early 20s. And, a lot of that kind of goes over into my teaching, which I guess we could talk about in the podcast. But yeah, that's me. I mean, I love to be as active as I can on social media to try and reach out to as many teachers as possible and just to do my best to encourage and inspire in any way I can.
Very cool. Yeah, you know, I'm actually a listener of your podcast. I was just finishing up listening to your timeout episode, your teacher timeout episode, as we were getting ready to record here. And I am envious of your ability to do a weekly solo show. I just don't think I could. I don't think I could do that.
Really? Yeah. I think, well, it's funny because I think that I'm the opposite, right? Like I don't mind doing interviews and things like that, but I'm not quite sure how I would do as an interview show. I really like doing the individual concepts because I think it taps a little bit into my creative side, but even more so, the one reason, to be honest with you, that I actually started it was to try and overcome my fear of public speaking. So I had a goal to kind of get rid of that fear because I've always been scared to death to stand up in front of a crowd and speak, which is weird because I don't mind getting in front of my students to speak. But I decided that a year ago I was going to overcome that fear, and my first step was my podcast. So that really is what drove me to do a show all by myself or without an interview to kind of help me to alleviate that fear in some way.
Yeah. I like that facing your fears part. That's cool. I do not share the fear of standing in front of people. And I find it odd that as a teacher you do. That's kind of an odd combination, I would say.
Yeah. It's really weird. And it was at a point, I mean, at this point, believe it or not, I think that because I've had to do some speaking in front of people, I guess the more that I've had to do that and put myself in that position, the more comfortable I've gotten. So the podcast was really that stepping stone. And at this point, although that fear is still there, I get very nervous before I step on to a stage or in front of a group of people that are there to just listen to what I have to say. The nerves and everything have been lessened, which is good. So slowly but surely that fear is going away, which is exciting to me in my mind. Cause once you face a fear, you no longer fully fear it anymore. Although somewhere deep inside, there's something always that seems to lurk. You know what I mean?
No, I very much know what you mean. I had a pretty intense fear of heights for most of my life.
And a few years ago, I randomly decided that I would just rent a car and drive to the Grand Canyon. And that in my infinite ability to do things without planning, that was the extent of my planning was, hey, let's just jump in a car and drive to the Grand Canyon from Florida.
There you go.
Which turns out to be kind of an undertaking. but anyways, I get to the Grand Canyon and I have this like very surreal moment where I'm standing on a rock, just like sitting on rocks, looking down at a 700-foot drop and no guardrail, no nothing, and no fear. And it was a very odd experience to sort of alleviate that. And then now it's significantly reduced, but there are still some moments where it comes back. So I definitely, I know your point. Definitely yeah. Know your point.
Cool. Yeah.
Well, I want to start with, I kind of want to start with the coaching thing. You know, it's funny you said that you started with years of coaching experience, and my brain went right away to instructional coaching and coaching teachers and not athletic coaching. So can you tell me a little bit about how that kind of falls into your teaching profession?
Oh, it's interesting, actually, because they connect in a way that it's almost seamless because I've played sports my entire life. So I've had some fantastic coaches that I would consider to be mentors. And it was through their mentorship and through the experiences that I've had with them that I kind of learned how to coach. So when I've been coaching, I've always had really priorities of mine have never been to win, although winning is important. And I've had significant success in that area, depending on the seasons, I guess you can say. But whenever I have a team, my main focus is really to just build relationships with my players and get them to understand what it means to not only accomplish a goal, but to set a goal and then reach it together. So what I've done is I've kind of taken that philosophy and I've brought it to my classroom. So when I go into my classroom, for instance, with my students, I'm very big on goal setting. So we set goals, both individual goals, as well as what I would call our team goals. And my students actually carry those goals with them. So they make an individual goal, they make a team goal, which is our class goal, and then they make what I call a practice goal. So that's kind of like a goal that they themselves are going to continually work on throughout the year. And by bringing that in, what I've been able to kind of develop is a sense of camaraderie, even within the class itself. So the kids really get this idea that they can rely on one another in order to help them successfully achieve their goals. And that's one big aspect of coaching that I've brought into my classroom, because I'm the one then that can help coach them along the way and teach them different strategies and different things that they're going to use to help them be successful. And I kind of approach it as if my students are my team, and, you know, our goal is to really help them to accomplish whatever it is that they individually want to achieve.
That's an interesting kind of way to look at it. You know, I love the goal setting aspect and looking at the sort of class or team, looking at your classroom as a team. I like that a lot. And I'm sure that has a really great impact on the culture and climate in your classroom for sure.
Yeah, I think it does. I think the neat thing is when my students, what I found is that when my students come into class, for the most part, they tend to be excited and we have some different things going on, but they have a lot of ownership within the class itself. Because one thing that I did when I was coaching as well is we would have weekly team meetings, and those team meetings would consist of things that we did well during the week, things that I as their coach need to be more attentive to in order for us to really kind of move forward in our team goals and things like that. So in class, every week we have a class meeting where my students really evaluate me. So what they do is they tell me what they felt I did well, what I did that really didn't work for them. And we plan the following week together. So it's amazing to see different ideas. Like I'll give them the concept that we're going to learn, and I basically ask them how they would like to learn it. So for instance, if I was writing or if I was teaching a narrative writing lesson or something like that, and I told them that we're going to be focusing on personal narratives, instead of me coming up with this idea that I think they would be like, they would be interested in. I have them tell me exactly how they would like to learn it, and then I formulate my lessons around that. If that makes sense.
Wow, yeah. I like that. I imagine that it does not always work. Like, there has to be sort of an... I'm assuming there has to be an acceptable... A climate accepting of failure on some level to make that a possibility.
Yeah, it really... It is. I mean, I think... Anytime we have that meeting, and one thing that we do talk about that you said failure, and I know you said you listened to my last time out, and I kind of talked about that. And within my class, we have this culture of embracing failure because my students understand that when they fail, it's not necessarily that they have come to a point where they can no longer do something, but it's almost celebrated in a way, meaning that when they fail, we kind of now learn from that and we figure out ways to move forward. And when we have our meetings, sometimes they'll come up with great ideas. I'll try it and it just flops. You know, it's something that we thought might have worked and it didn't. So we revisit those things and we kind of figure out, well, why did it fail? Was it something that, you know, I did in my planning? Was it something that really, you know, we probably couldn't have done anyways, you know, so we kind of revisit those things, try and improve on them. And anytime anything flops or anytime even the individual students fail, we know that we're going to continually learn from those things because, you know, failure brings about success when we kind of approach it in that way.
Hmm. Yeah, that's cool. That's such an interesting way to look at all of it. Like, the whole picture, this goal-driven and failure-safe environment where students are really leading the way, it's so... I don't know that I could think of one buzzword to throw at it that is sort of accepted in education right now. You're hitting, like, a few different places, and I feel like that would just be... I would love to learn in an environment like that. I just feel like that's where I want to be. I want you to be my teacher. That's pretty much what I'm saying.
Thanks. I appreciate it. Yeah, it's fun. And I think that that's the goal, right? We want to make sure that our students feel safe. And we want to make sure that the ultimate goal is not pass or fail. The ultimate goal is that they're learning and that we're on this journey with them, you know. And our goal is to, or our job as their teacher is really to be their guide. You know, it's like we're in this story, and I've heard this a lot where, you know, teachers are part of this story and the students really are the hero. You know, we're like the guide along the way that's going to guide them so that they can have their happily ever after type of thing, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it does. I like that. And I'm very story driven. I believe in the power of stories. So I really can buy into that. I can buy into that for sure.
Cool.
Man. Cool. What a, like, just an awesome, like, we're only like 10 minutes in and you're just blowing me away already. Like, this is great. Love it. You know, I want to move into my first question because I'm even more intrigued by what your answer is going to be. So
okay.
I want to ask you, what is the biggest problem facing education right now?
The biggest problem facing education. I think, and that's a tough one, right? I think that I guess my answer could be different, or anyone's answer could be different, depending on the view of the person that you're asking. So I think the issues that we face, honestly, can range from student preparation to teacher preparation, depending on who you talk to. But, you know, I think that I've heard all the complaints or a ton of complaints about what's wrong with education, but very few solutions from those people that tend to tell me what's wrong. You know, so I think that yes. I am a big picture person with a positive outlook. So I like to look towards the future, especially when students are concerned, almost through what I would call an unfinished lens, if that makes sense. What I mean by that is I like to think that no matter what we do, that we're a work in progress as a teacher, and every student that we teach is also a work in progress. And I would like to believe that teachers across the country feel the same way, but I think one of the biggest problems that we face as educators or in education, and I think I fall into this as well, is, I guess, the trap of negativity. That's what I would kind of label in my mind right now to be the biggest issue that I see. And the reason I think that is because I really believe that it's much easier to fall into negativity and get caught up in that world than it is to remain positive despite whatever circumstances we might have. And I think that...
How do we support... Because I agree. I think that negativity factor is major, and it's been something I'm struggling with a lot in my own school, like working with my staff. And what is it that you feel can be done to pull teachers out of that? I think of it as sometimes like a negativity vortex. So you just sort of continually spiral farther and farther down. So what is it that we can do at any level to support or pull them out of that vortex or prevent them from falling into the vortex?
Well, I think that the first step would kind of be to recognize where this negativity creeps in, because I call it like a trap, or you call it like a vortex, right? So it's kind of one of those things that I don't think that it necessarily is this big negativity bomb. It's just something that actually kind of creeps up on us in little ways, and then it tends to grow and grow and grow to the point where all people do is maybe complain, or their first reaction is a complaint instead of a compliment, right? And I think that negativity can creep in different ways. I think one way is through gossip. One thing that I've seen is that in my building, even, or through the years that I've taught, I've experienced being in the middle of some of this gossip that might happen. And whether that gossip's in the hallway talking about colleagues or students, or if it shows up in the form of a joke at the expense of someone, I think the fact is that gossip never brings a positive outcome with it. So I've kind of adopted a rule of thumb for myself, I guess, and it's pretty simple, and it's actually worked out really well. It's kept me out of that negative phase. And that rule of thumb basically is that when I talk to other teachers, whether it's in the hallway or even in a closed classroom, I never will take part in a conversation where I have to look over my shoulder or lower my voice while we're talking. Because usually when that happens, it means that whatever we're talking about or whoever we're talking about is something that we wouldn't share if that person was standing right next to us. So I avoid those types of conversations at all costs. And I have found that by staying out of the gossip, that element of negativity kind of has left my area or my realm of influence. But I also think that sometimes negativity can creep in through faculty rooms, right? Like when people are just venting about their students. And I think that sometimes simple venting sessions or these types of conversations that have any negative spin about students when we're in a group setting, it can cause us to look at one student in a totally different light, even if we've never met them. So it's another area that I try and stay away from as much as possible. Or even sometimes negativity can show up in our own mind, you know, out of frustration or overwhelm that, you know, we're personally facing on any given day. So I guess, like you said, the big question is how do we overcome it? Because if our mindset is stuck in a negative space, it's going to affect everything we do, and it'll definitely spill over to those we teach. You know, and I really feel that one reason why negativity and complaining is such an issue in education is because very rarely are we intentional to stop it in its tracks. So, you know, and I'm a realist. I know that negativity is going to creep in on us all. And when it does, I think the thing that we need to understand is we have to deal with it. So I've found that having someone to confide in that I completely trust and can be vulnerable with is one way that I'm able to release that negativity and move forward. Like for me, for instance, that's my wife, right? She'll listen to my complaints. She'll give me feedback. She's not connected to anyone that I'm necessarily complaining about, but she'll also give me that kick in the pants that I need and tell me, you know, you got to move on or just grow up about this, right? So she's completely honest, and that really helps me to kind of move forward and kind of get my balance on things. And then I've also started, and I found this to be fantastic, for me. I start each day with one thing that I'm grateful for, and I literally say it out loud on my way to work. So before I listen to any podcasts on my commute or before I do anything, and I know this might sound weird, but I will literally say out loud one thing that I'm grateful for, and I make it my one big focus goal for the day. So that anytime anything negative comes my way or if there's some kind of thing that becomes frustrating or anything like that, I will remind myself of what my positive focus goal for the day is. And it helps me change my mindset in the moment. It's taken some time and some training to do this. Like I've done some different things to kind of train myself to think this way. But I find that if we can change our mindset in the moment, that then our mindset over time will change completely.
Hmm. Well, it's almost like a less depressing way to look at fake it until you make it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. You know, and I think, you know, although negativity within education may never leave, I think if we take actionable steps in a positive direction, our students ultimately will be the ones that benefit the most at the end of the day. And I think we'll just be happier. So I kind of try and have that mindset of positivity as much as possible.
Yeah. You talked about those conversations where you never have to look over your shoulder and venting about students, and so much of these are the conversations between two teachers, between two adults dealing with the same problems and same frustrations. And there's similar conversations and comments I've heard made by people across the country, actually outside of the country, even, you know, international as well. And I love your very positive spin. Like, let's just move past it and everything else. I wonder if from a coaching aspect, and I coach teachers, you coach, you know, students in athletics, how do you sort of push them over that hump? How do you, because I'm sure even in coaching, you've probably had students who have struggled getting out of a sort of negative vein, I would assume, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. How do you push them over that hump? Or even in your classroom, I guess, how do you push students that are, I'm failing, I can't do it, I can't do it? How do you get them over that?
See, now I've done a couple of things, both in coaching as well as in teaching. For instance, if I had a student that came in and said, you know, I'm failing, I don't get this, or I just can't do it, I will sit with them, and what I'll do is I'll tell them that what they need to do is they need to come and see me, and I talk to them privately, right? So in a conversation one-on-one with my students, I will ask them first why. So I always want to know why they think whatever it is that they think. So why do you think you're going to fail? Or why do you think you are going to not do well? Or why don't you understand? And what I often find is that it's not that they actually think that they are going to fail or that they don't really understand it. It's almost as if what I found in many cases is that they don't have that self-confidence or that belief in themselves to move past the fact that they can do it, or move past the fact that they think that they're going to fail. So I will instill belief in themselves. In other words, what I try and do is I try and let them understand that I personally believe in them. I try and give them that pep talk, or so to speak. But at the same time, after that pep talk, there's action steps that have to be taken. So as a coach, if I have, let's say, you know, I've coached softball for years, right? So if I have a player that is in a batting slump and she comes to me and says, "Coach, I can't hit. I can't hit the ball. And I don't know what to do." I'll talk them through with that pep talk. I believe in you. You can. Your hard work is paying off. But it can't just stop there. And a lot of times, you know, we can get motivated, but there has to be that extra step, I feel, in order to get someone who thinks in a negative way to believe in themselves in a positive way. So for that batter, I will literally take the steps to almost teach them or train them, find the areas that they are negative or that they're weak in, and I will do everything that I can to help them improve little by little until that negative area no longer exists. So in a student, once I find out why they are struggling, I find that after my pep talk, I come alongside of them, whether that means that I meet with them at lunch every single day, or whether that means that, you know, during class, I'm going to meet with them and constantly be the person that is making them stay accountable to furthering their knowledge. I'm going to be that person that does what it takes to give them what they need in order to no longer have the negative thing that's causing them to feel as if they're going to fail. Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, you know, from a coaching teacher's aspect, that's very, I mean, certainly actionable in the same sense. You know, a teacher is struggling with whatever issues and telling them, yes, you can do it, but also following up with those action steps. I think that's critical, is that follow-up component. It's almost like anybody can motivate, but only a coach gets you to get past it, kind of thing.
Yeah, I agree. Because I think if you're willing to, And that's the other thing that I found. If you are willing to put in the time as a coach to invest in, whether you're investing in teachers, investing in students, investing in players, there forms a bond there where the person you're investing in essentially doesn't want to let you down. They don't want to disappoint you, and they want to make sure that they're doing everything they can to make you proud and to make themselves proud, because they have somebody that's willing to invest the time that it takes to help them succeed.
And that's a sentiment I've heard echoed a couple times on my podcast with other guests talking about their own favorite teacher ever, saying that it was someone they didn't want to let down. And so I think if we can all become that teacher for a student somewhere, if we can be that teacher that they don't want to let down, we're definitely headed in the right direction.
Exactly. And I think that's crucial. You know, if you can become that teacher that they love, right? That teacher that they look up to or that they admire, it really does make a big difference. And that's why I think relationships are crucial, right? The relationships we have with our students are really the gateways to helping them love learning.
Yeah, for sure. Cool.
Yeah.
Man. All right. Well, you know, you may have touched on some of it already, but I do want to move into my second question and ask you, what is something that you're doing that you wish all other teachers would do?
Something that I'm doing. Well, that's a tough question. I think one reason why is I'm privileged to work alongside some really amazing teachers every day. So that's pretty cool. And I'm also blessed to have the chance to talk to teachers from all over the world with my Teachonomy community that really inspire me to be better. But I guess one thing that I wish more teachers would do that I've been trying to do, especially over the past year, is really to just be there for one another, like lift each other up, celebrate each other when you succeed, and help each other when you need assistance. I mean, basically, to be willing to create a community with your colleagues, as well as with teachers around the world, which, you know, could be done via Twitter, social media in some cases, or just start in your own building. I've been teaching for a while now, and one thing that I've noticed is that teachers like to have control. Me being one of those, I think I'm guilty of that sometimes. You know, like we like to have our classrooms a certain way, or we teach our lessons a specific way, or, you know, we like our friends to be a certain type of person, just like many people in all walks of life do. But I found that one thing I've been trying to do is step outside of those stereotypes and comfort zones, not only help others, but in the end, it helps me to grow in ways that I never realized I needed to. So I guess I would say that my hope is for teachers, or my wish would be for teachers, to be willing to embrace all educators, regardless of whether or not they agree, regardless of whether or not they can offer you anything in return, and just encourage, help, and inspire each other as much as possible. You know, I mean, life is tough, teaching is tough, and it definitely is not all unicorns and rainbows, and there are, you know, there's going to be days when, you know, we get frustrated. But the best thing, I think, is to have that community where we can be real, we can be who we are, but at the same time, we're accepted and welcomed no matter what. And I think one way to kind of develop that is to be someone who is encouraging to others. You know, you're not the person bringing negativity, you're the person bringing inspiration or encouragement. You know, we can be who we are through the bad days and good days, but I think in the end, you come out even better than before when you are willing to, you know, build that community. And when we have community, we can create solutions to problems, we can come up with answers to questions, and we can become better teachers overall. So I guess one thing, like I said, that I've been trying to do this year is to inspire and encourage anyone that I can get in front of, you know, as a teacher. I want to make sure that if I can bring that type of positivity in, I know that I can build a community around that, that essentially will do the same for me in the long run.
Man, I've had a lot of people talk about, you know, connected educators and connecting to other teachers, and that's something that people talk about as being important and wishing others would do. But I think you're the first one to sort of come at it from this be there for each other and embrace and support each other factor. And I agree with you wholeheartedly that that's so critical. And it's something that I'm focusing a lot on at my school this year as the curriculum resource teacher and sort of running all PD and what I like to call all big picture projects, and where I'm, you know, just forcing change down the throats of my staff. and it's something I'm focusing on, and I think is so critical. I think back to my own first year teaching and feeling isolated and alone, and it was the hardest year of my career.
Mm-hmm.
Are you coming at this from a place where this, you've had the other end of this before, where you felt unsupported and that is where you're coming from? Or do you feel it's just sort of a general kind of thing?
Well, I think that it's kind of both, I guess. I have been in parts of my life or part of my teaching career even where I've felt, you know, to some extent on the other end of it, right? On a point where, you know, I noticed that, you know, within certain realms of teaching, there can be cliques, right? There can be certain people that are, you know, with each other and no one else is included. Or you have, you know, an opportunity where you're struggling, but no one's there to really kind of give you that assistance or that encouragement to help you move forward. And, you know, early in my career, I had a great mentor, which was awesome. Like I had a great mentor that would walk me through things and it was wonderful. And then, you know, there would be times after, you know, that mentorship ended and, you know, now I'm teaching for a couple of years. There would still be times when, you know, I would feel kind of lost and I wasn't quite sure which direction I was supposed to go, or I felt frustrated for, you know, for whatever reason might be. And, you know, I didn't want to have to constantly go to my mentor and, you know, complain or ask for help. But there really wasn't that community that I felt comfortable with to get involved with and to really support each other. You know, I felt sometimes I wish I had that, you know. And now currently this year, I have the opportunity. I'm mentoring a brand new teacher. It's her first year. And one thing that I want to offer her or provide for her is that opportunity to start building a community. You know, I'm trying to plug her into, you know, some social communities that she could get involved in. Also plug her in with my inner community so that she has a support system within the building itself, as well as me. So she can always come to me for anything she needs. But I'm trying to prepare her as she goes to have a well set foundation and a community of people that are going to continually be there for her. I will as well, but, you know, to continually be there that will help support her. So yeah, I think I've kind of come full circle. I think I started on one end and now my goal is to try and make sure no one else has to be at that end, if that makes sense.
No, it 100%. You're so aligned with where I'm at this year at my school, and in that I'm just trying to affect that change at a school-wide level, and my school is massive, so that's 130-something teachers that I'm trying to affect that level of change with.
Okay.
And so, you know, I'm in total agreement with you that, and especially where you talked about social, I find that that is so critical. And I think teachers often overlook that in importance. You know, we don't want to feel like we're never leaving work, and going out after work with some coworkers can kind of sometimes become that negativity cycle, and we don't want that. But at the same time, having those people you're comfortable with and can just relax and, you know, yes, complain about work for a couple minutes, but then say, you know, how are the kids? How's the wife? Like some of that outside of it, so that you feel you have people you can trust and rely on campus, kind of connecting your points. Like, I think that's absolutely critical. And I love that you're doing that for a beginning teacher now.
Yeah, I think, and thanks. Yeah, I think that is, I agree. Just something crucial that has to happen. And I agree. Like if you go out, you know, you're out on the town or, you know, you go out for drinks or whatever happens with your colleagues, I think it's inevitable that there will be some of that, you know, complaining or venting happening. But you're right. You know, that might happen in the beginning. But I think if the majority of that conversation becomes one that isn't just venting, but it's talking about, you know, those personal things or, you know, building the relationship, the things that actually matter between the colleagues, that can go a long way.
Yeah, for sure. Do you find getting similar feedback from listeners from your podcast? And because I think your podcast falls in line with this in so many ways. You know, I started listening over the summer and was listening to your teacher summer series on like songs and lyrics and how those apply to education, and you know, the even the most recent one about failure and stuff. Like, do you get feedback from a lot of listeners saying they feel the value in what you're doing in that same vein?
Yeah, it's interesting that you should say that. I think one way, because my podcast obviously is tied into Teachonomy as a whole, right? So the way that I have found people have contacted me through different avenues, but my listeners, what I found is, you know, I've gotten emailed actually a number of times, but one particular email was this week, to be honest with you. So it's funny that you say that. And it was an interesting email because I've gotten feedback that people have really been encouraged. And, you know, my whole vision when I set out to create the podcast and everything else, like I had said, is to be a source of positivity and inspiration for teachers so that they can become unforgettable. That's pretty much my vision or my mission, right? And I had an email this week that really was a little bit different, but it kind of went to a different level. And what I found was I had someone email me and they actually were asking for my advice on a very sensitive issue. And they were really looking for me to give them the encouragement that they need because of what was happening at their school. And so I emailed them back and, you know, I did the best I could to give my advice and, you know, understand where they're coming from, because, you know, it's not always about let's be encouraging without realizing the fact that there are things in life that happen that just aren't happy, you know, and sometimes people just need to understand that, you know, that although those things happen, that there is a light at the end of the tunnel. And as I went through this email correspondence with this person, at the end of it, she was, you know, totally encouraged, feeling a lot better. It made me feel good, but it made me realize that what I'm doing with this encouraging message or what I'm trying to do, at least in giving back to teachers in an encouraging or positive way, is really kind of paying off. And it's something that I think made me realize that it's definitely an area that is hitting a nerve that people are searching for. You know, there's tons of podcasts that are awesome, tons that I listen to. And I just want to make sure that I have that space giving my own personal piece to what I can to teachers. And I do get that feedback, and I find that it has been awesome, just the impact that it's had.
Yeah, that's great. You know, and it's funny to me how this positivity also spirals. You know, we talked about negativity spirals, but the positivity spirals in that you feel like you're doing something good and you're not sure. And for anybody that I've said this before on the show, but podcasting also feels, I don't know if you feel the same way, but I think most do, feels like you're talking to yourself a lot of times. Like, there's really not good metrics to know if people are really listening or how much they're listening or if they like it or not. Often feedback, there's a big disconnect I find between podcasters and listeners quite often. But, you know, that you feel good about what you're doing, then you get this positive feedback, and that makes you feel even better, which gets you to do it more or more often or more effectively, which then gets you more feedback. It's just like this positivity spiral heading in the opposite direction.
Yeah, I totally agree. I think, and that's an interesting way that you put it, because my wife and I would joke for the first 3 months of my podcast, I felt like I was talking to myself, right? I didn't have any feedback. I would try and look at metrics or I try and look at all these statistics, and I wasn't really seeing anything happening. And then it kind of started to grow and spiral, like you said, in this positive manner. But you're absolutely right, because when we get feedback in a positive way, it makes us want to continue to do even more for the people that are giving you that feedback, you know, and that can tie into teaching and our students, and can tie into everything. And I think that you're right. That spiral of positivity is something that I feel that we really need to focus on and do our best to make happen as much as possible.
And I think a point you kind of made there is we need to take that back to the classrooms as well. You know, there needs to be that positivity with your kids, because the easiest way to pull someone out of a negativity spiral is to give them a positive comment. Even if they don't, like, not if they don't deserve it, I don't mean that, but even if it doesn't seem like something major, to you a passing comment of like, hey, good job, or hey, you know, whatever, new shoes, I like them, they're cool, whatever. It doesn't matter. Sometimes it's just those passing words that can make all the difference for a kid.
Oh, I totally agree. I actually had, and it's funny to say that today, I actually had a student in my class and we were just having a discussion, and it was on something, it was just on a basic story that we were reading. And I had one particular student who I knew had a lot of good things to say, and this and you know, he's not shy at all, and he just wasn't involved in the conversation. So I did one of those things. I just called on him. I just said, you know, what do you think? And he kind of lashed out at first, and he said, you know, why are you calling on me? I didn't have my hand raised. And he had this weird negative tone to him. And in that moment, I had the decision where I could have reprimanded him or disciplined him in some way, or I could have handled it in a positive manner. And all I said, and it's kind of to your point, I gave him positive reinforcement or positive words of encouragement. And then what he shared next was awesome. And all I said to him when he lashed out, I said, you know, the reason why I called on you is because I feel that you are extremely intelligent, and what you have to share will help everyone in the class. And if you don't want to share, that's okay. But I think that that would be a shame, because you would be hiding the immense value that you could bring to everyone else. And then his whole demeanor changed when I said that, you know, and he went on for the next 3 minutes and discussed his answer, but he was very proud of what he was saying. So you're right. Those simple positive words could literally redirect someone from being angry to being proud of what they have to say.
Man, that's such a great way to handle it, because I know so many teachers, and myself included, that the impulse would be there to say, hey, don't talk to me like that. And then, again, you're feeding into that negativity cycle. But to come at it with a, okay, well, it's because you have such great things to, like, wow, it's just such a, to answer that negativity with positivity. And like you said, it worked. And I don't imagine many scenarios where it wouldn't work.
Yeah, I agree. And even if it doesn't, even if they were to continue, you know, to not want to answer, there's something deep inside of them that just sparked in a positive way. And over time, I think it definitely makes a big difference.
That's cool.
Yeah.
It's really neat. Awesome. Man, you know, so many cool things. All right, I'm going to go to my last question.
Okay.
And we might double back on some of this stuff, but that's okay. My last question for you is, who is the best teacher you've ever had?
Best teacher. Well, I've had a lot of great teachers. Let's see how I want to go about it. If I were to go from a school standpoint, you know, my parents have been amazing teachers. I've had some fantastic teachers all the way down, along my whole life. But I think that if I had to pick one teacher that in my education career, being a coach, I think that I would pick a teacher that was also my coach. And this was a man by the name of Coach William Bills. That's his name. And he was my
coach. Bill Bills.
Bill Bills, yeah. And he actually is a Hall of Fame coach now. He's broken all of these records for wins. I mean, he just got his 1,000th win in some sport or something. I don't know. He's a really good coach. But the wins and loss column isn't really what tells his story. I remember the things that he taught me. And one reason why I think that I would consider him to be the best teacher is probably because he was the most impactful teacher. So what I mean by that is, it's to be just a little long story short, I have coached with him. So he coached me in high school, and he actually went to college, to my college, got a coaching job and coached me through college, which was a rare thing. So he coached me for 8 years. And then after that 8 years, I went on and coached with him for 15. So we had quite a relationship. So I guess you could say he impacted me quite a bit. And, you know, and then after I had experience with him, coaching both with him and playing for him, I was able to kind of develop my own story based on lessons that I learned from him. You know, one particular lesson that he taught me was, and he would tell it to us all the time, he told us that our ultimate goal as an athlete and as a student was to be a sponge. And he basically would tell us that, you know, what a sponge does is it will, when you put it in water, it literally soaks up as much as it possibly can. And our goal should be to, when we're in class, soak up as much knowledge as we can from the people that are teaching us or from what we're learning. And as an athlete, we want to soak up as much as we can in order to get better. But then the thing about a sponge is that when you need more, you kind of wring it out, right? You wring it out, all the water goes away, and then you put it back in for it to soak up more. And he said that wringing out process is the process that you take as an athlete or as a student and give back to someone else. So he said that's where you wring out all of that knowledge and you share that knowledge with someone else, and then you come back and you soak all the knowledge back in as you that you can, and you continue that process over and over again. And that was something that really impacted me. And I do a whole thing with my students where I bring a sponge, I go through the whole speech with them, and I let them know that, you know, you never know what you're going to learn. You know, if you turn off your brain and you're not a sponge, you're not soaking in everything you possibly can, you can miss some really great learning moments. So our goal every year is to be a sponge, right? So he taught me that, and that's something that really has stuck with me and it's impacted me. He's also and I would say some other simple things. I mean, preparation is necessary for success, right? He taught me that in order for me to be successful, I need to be prepared. You know, I can't just wing it when I walk into a classroom, or I can't just wing it when I'm planning a practice, or even when I'm just planning life. Like, you really do need to prepare. And that's, you know, just some simple lessons that this man had taught me in all of the years that I've been with him has been remarkable. You know, respect, one thing that he was a stickler on was that our respect level, not only for him but for each other, had to be at the top level possible. But anytime we went anywhere, we were to leave it cleaner than we left it. You know, if we were in a sports setting and we brought our materials or we brought our bags or whatever we might have brought, we were leaving that place much cleaner because we were respecting the people that allowed us to use their stuff. You know, hard work was inevitable. You know, that was something that we were expected to do, not something that we just did. It was just, he raised the bar to the point of expectation. And that's kind of all of these little things I've brought with me, not only in my coaching career, but back into my classroom. So my students can have a little taste of this teacher that had impacted me. And I think that it'll make a difference in their lives. And I think the number one thing, though, honestly, that I learned from him, and the reason why I think he was the most impactful teacher, is that to him, relationships mattered more than trophies. You know, it was the relationships with his players, with his students, that were the things that mattered the most and were the things that lasted the longest. You know, we kind of felt like family. If you played for him or you were taught by him, you almost felt like you were his son or daughter. And I kind of like to have that feeling for my students. You know, I want my students to feel like when they come into my room, they're not coming into Mr. Poole's class. They're coming into Mr. Poole's family. And when they get that kind of feeling, they will not only perform for you and do all of that, but they're going to be impacted in a way that's going to last a lifetime.
Wow. Not even sure which direction to take that. Oh, wow, so much in there. You know, you talk about, I had one direction to go, and I'll come back to it, but you ended with that family aspect. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I'm in a unique position where I get to keep a lot of my students year after year. I have a very small number of students doing my student tech support, and I keep them year after year. And today was actually senior breakfast for our school. So we do a senior breakfast every year. It's when we do our big senior panoramic. So we get all the seniors in one place at once in their senior shirts. And we have them like stand and write out in human bodies the year they're graduating. So in this case, 2017. And it's a cool tradition. Cool. We've been doing it for a long time. When you have 1,000 seniors, it makes it easy to write out numbers on a field.
Exactly.
Cause it takes up an entire football field.
I can imagine.
But, you know, I looked around that room and this is my fourth year at my current school. And I started as a ninth grade English teacher. And then I moved into this digital coaching role and started the student tech support crew and now into CRT, but I still run the student tech support. So this group of kids, there are about 10 kids in this group that have literally been my student every single day they've been in high school. And I have been their teacher every day I've been in this high school. And I have another group of probably 30 or 40 or 50 who have been my students for 2 years or 1 year, or, and they're all this like senior class. And I was standing around the senior breakfast, looking around the room and realizing that in May, when they graduate, I am going to be a blubbering mess.
Yeah, of course.
These are my kids. Like, they are my children. My son is 5, so they've literally been my kids almost as long as my actual son. And so one of their moms was there helping with the senior breakfast, and I said, you know, I'm going to be a mess at graduation. She goes, oh, I had an older one. I went through it, and I did it. And I go, yeah, but these are my babies. Uh-huh. Like, these are my kids that I'm about to watch. I don't know that I can handle this.
Yeah.
And I believe that they have some of that connection with me, and I get that from what you're saying about Bill's, you know, Coach Bill's saying that those relationships matter so much more than the trophies or the accomplishments or the grades or anything else. Those relationships are so critical. Those are the things that you remember. It's not what they taught you. It's not the content. It's the life lessons and the connections that keep you going past the point of just a teacher.
Yeah, exactly.
So cool. But what I also noticed, and I think from what you said, probably the biggest takeaway I have from what you said is the thing about sponging, is the sponges. And it was like, okay, cool, yeah, you soak up stuff like a sponge. It was the moment where you said you wring it out, and that's you giving it back to someone else. And that is the vein I see for you in everything we've talked about today, is this idea of, you know, getting rid of negativity, and you're actively involved every day with your blog and your podcast and in your school day and everything else of negating that negativity and into supporting other teachers and holding them up. And that is, I feel like that is so completely you wringing yourself out, wringing your sponge out to support others. And I always love to see that greatest teacher, the impact that teacher has, and oftentimes my guests don't necessarily notice all those connections. I feel like you're probably reflective enough to have seen that, but I love that part of it. Is that moment right there is so much what you're doing, I feel like.
Thanks. Yeah, I think I agree, right? It's one of those things that particular story has stuck with me for years, right? And it was because it was instilled, right? You know, Coach Bills basically would instill that in us, and it was to the point where it became part of who we were or who we are. And you're absolutely right. I mean, I think it's almost natural. Like, I have this vision and I have this mission to make sure that I can do my best to be positive, inspire, and encourage teachers everywhere. And the only way I know how to do that is by being a sponge, kind of soaking in everything I can, learning everything I can about anyone that I can, and then wringing it out and bringing as much positivity to them that I can. So I mean, I thank you. That's quite a compliment from you. So I appreciate that. I'm not usually great at taking compliments, but I would agree with you in the fact that that's kind of how I was raised, right? I was raised in sports, and I was with him for over 20 years, and that story was constantly instilled inside of me. So it's basically part of who I am at this point.
And that's just such a cool experience to have been able to work with him on so many levels and just, you know, talk about embracing change. That relationship has changed so many times just in the course of that story, because we all know that at varying levels you can interact with kids and have a different kind of relationship with kids as they mature and become adults. And then for you to take that all the way into 20 years of time is just, I mean, that's I don't know, that I have no words for the opportunity I feel like you've had in that relationship.
Oh, I agree. I think it's a very rare situation, and I'm blessed to have had it and still have it. You know, I still talk to Mr. Bills all the time, and it's funny. I still call him Mr. Bills, and he tells me that, you know, we're past that point. And it's just one of those things. I think it's the respect aspect was so instilled with me from him that I just can't find myself to call him anything else. Right. So it's one of those things. I do think that I've been very privileged to have that relationship with him, because it's a mentor that has never left. You know, I think sometimes we have mentors that are with us for seasons, and, you know, very rarely do we have a mentor that is your lifelong mentor, right? And I've been lucky enough to have him as that lifelong, one of my lifelong mentors. So it's a rare relationship, but I feel very blessed to have had it.
Yeah, absolutely. And we can all thank Coach Bills for Teachonomy Talks and being able to listen to your podcast and read your blog and everything else, because I definitely think, you know, from what you've told me, I don't think you would be where you are, in even close to where you are, without that experience.
Oh, I totally agree. I totally agree.
Cool. Man, this is so much fun, Chuck. I really appreciate you coming on. I've had a great time talking to you. All my audience needs to go check out Teachonomy Talks. I'm obviously, as a podcaster and all my listeners, I always push towards the podcast first. I feel like you kind of lean blog first, I feel like.
A lot of times, yeah. I will basically, because what I do, I have a podcast every single week, and my blog posts usually come out every other week. But yeah, I usually push everyone to Teachonomy.com. But one reason why is because everything's there, so it's all accessible. They can kind of get anything, and I have found that with my audience, I have some people that just listen to the podcast, other people that just read the blog, and then I have a combination, you know. So my goal is to try and reach as many people as possible. So that's the main reason why I have everything in that one spot, so people can go there and they can, you know, almost take what they need for the day to help get them through in a positive manner.
Well, I will say to my audience, definitely, you know, I put your show in terms of recharge and refresh and great messages. I put it up there with, you know, Always a Lesson, that I'm a humongous fan of, with Gretchen Bridgers, and Teachonomy Talks definitely goes up there in the great way to start your day on the way to work. Get in your car, listen to Teachonomy Talks for the week, and just, you will be a more positive and inspired teacher by the time you get to work. I can safely guarantee that.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
So, Chuck, tell my audience how they can get to you. Besides, you know, how can they connect?
Well, they can connect in a couple of ways. I mean, on Twitter, you can connect with me. It's at cpool27, pool with an E at the end. And I'd love to connect with you there. You can connect with me on Facebook. You can literally go to our Teachonomy Facebook page, or I have a private Facebook group for teachers. It's just completely free. We have a great group of people in there, and that's just at teachonomy.com/private. And you just go in, ask to be accepted, and I'll accept you in. And that one is basically, what I do in that group is present questions, usually every day or every other day, to make people think. And we've really gotten some good discussions going on in there, and some encouragement. And then, of course, at teachonomy.com, right? You can find my podcast or my blog. You can find some of the videos of the 2-minute timeout for teachers as well. So I make some videos as well of those for people that don't want to listen to the podcast, but they want to take a look at the video. So they can see that as well there. So those are the main ways I would say to reach out, and, you know, feel free to message me if you ever need anything. My goal is to be able to help anyone in any way that I can. So I would love for anyone in your audience to reach out, listen to Teachonomy Talks. You can find that on iTunes, on Stitcher, on really all of the podcast things out there, any of the apps, you know, Teachonomy Talks, just search for that and you'll find it. So, yeah, that's how you could reach out.
Cool. And I will be checking out that private Facebook, because those kinds of discussions, I mean, my show is all about discussions. That's all this is trying to get to people to talk. So I'm 100% on board for getting involved with some daily discussions there. So that'll be where you'll be able to find me, is joining him at teachonomy.com/private, because I will be checking that out.
Awesome.
So.
Sure.
And yeah, so thanks again for talking to me. I really appreciate it. And you have a great night.
Yeah, you too. No problem. It's been great.
I feel so boosted up from that, bolstered up from that, and I know that you all have to as well. Thanks again, Chuck, for sitting down with me. If you'd like to connect with Chuck, check out his Twitter, he's cpool27, or check out his website at teachonomy.com. And if you'd like to join his private Facebook, I just did,
go to teachonomy.com/private. And of course, all those links are in the show notes. Well, I teased a special announcement, and I don't think you'll be disappointed. In order to celebrate episode 20 of the show, I'm going to run a giveaway. For the next 2 weeks, anyone who leaves a review on iTunes and or leaves feedback on the Flipgrid I announced a few weeks ago will be entered to win. The winner of the giveaway will be chosen at random from all those people that did feedback, and I'm going to send them a Planning Period Podcast t-shirt along with a few other pieces of swag I have. In order to enter, go to bradshuffler.com/feedback and follow one of the links to either iTunes or Flipgrid for the show, or on your podcast player, just go straight to the iTunes store, and let me know what you think. Then, listen to episode 22 in a couple of weeks, and I will announce the winner on the show. You can earn two entries, one for iTunes and one for Flipgrid, and my current students are not eligible. Sorry, kids. But you got a big shout-out in this episode, so take what you can get. You can always connect with me on Twitter. I'm at Brad Streffler. I love to hear from you guys. Like we said in the show, it can often feel like you're talking to yourself with a podcast. So when you guys reach out, it really is really great. And that's also a great place to connect if you'd like to be a guest on the show in the future. Until next week, be a sponge. Music for this podcast is provided by Kevin MacLeod and is the song Vicious, licensed under Creative Commons. This show is also a proud member of the Voice Ed Radio Network, a 24-hour radio network all about education all the time. Your voice belongs here.